Welcome to Let's Talk Land, a weekly land education talk show devoted to learning about farms and land, buying and selling, ownership, especially for real estate agents and realtors. Learn from the experts. Free land education. Hi, my name's Lou Jewell. I'm an accredited land consultant with United Country Real Estate, Sutton Properties, our new company name, along with my co-host, Teresa Martin. Hey, Teresa.
Hey, Lou.
How are you today?
I'm great. Hope you are.
Did you sell anything today?
I listed a house.
All right. I listed one, too. So here we go. And some land, too. But anyway, buying and selling homes, land and farms in Western Piedmont, North Carolina, Southern Virginia, just give us a shout. We'll help you out. Our new office is located at 102 East Main Street and next to BB&T Bank in downtown Pilot Mountain, North Carolina. So please make a note of our changes. Our company's new website is www.allsuttonproperties.com. That's A-L-L-S-U-T-T-O-N properties.com. And just a program note, Dr. Barbie's Ask the Doctor show will follow this show and will air at 10 a.m. Our guest today is Bert Mayboom. Bert, welcome.
Okay, thank you very much, Lou.
Bert, you're one of my neighbors and have been for a number of years in Pilot Mountain.
Indeed.
But you came a long ways to get there, didn't you?
I may sound like different too, yes.
Bert is a geological consultant. We'll talk about your background. You're actually an instructor at Forsyth Tech in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. How long have you got a geology course there, right?
Correct, yeah. I started in 2010.
About 2010.
10 years, yeah.
Wow, coming up.
Indeed.
And how many courses do you teach in that curriculum?
Well, just teach one class per semester at the moment. Some semesters, actually, I've taught two classes.
And these are four-hour classes? Or
these are there's two lecture classes and a lab class, so it's about 5 hours a week.
Yeah. And then that's for a semester?
That's one semester, yeah. And, of course, you got a new class the next semester, yeah.
And you teach a different course there?
Oh, same course.
Just a group of students.
Repeat, yeah.
That's a great school down there.
It is,
we're proud to have them.
Indeed.
People don't realize, you know, these small tech colleges and schools, that's what's with all the new technology and all the stuff coming out, that's what's creating the education for all this new technology. I keep using that word, but it's very important what you guys do.
Well, create new job opportunities too, yeah.
If I may, just a little bit about your background, if you'll notice, Bert has a slight accent. He was a native of the Netherlands. Born in
Curaçao.
Curaçao. There was a war battle there or something, wasn't it?
World War II? May have been actually. It's next to Aruba. Most listeners actually may know the name Aruba.
Oh,
rather than Curaçao.
So this is an island.
An island.
In the sea.
In the sea. Off the Venezuelan coast.
Oh, okay.
My wife always says, actually, I'm near Cuba, but that's different.
I was thinking you were born in the Netherlands, but this is an island owned.
In the Caribbean, yeah, Netherlands, Antilles.
Wow, God, see how much you learned, Teresa. Did you know that?
I watched the Miss Universe pageant, so yes, I did.
Okay.
did we have one from Curaçao?
Yes, you did.
So if I'd read my notes, it says in the Netherlands, Antilles. So, but anyway, but you hold a degree in geology. From the Leiden State University, is that pronounced right?
Well, it's Leiden, yeah.
Leiden?
Yeah.
Leiden?
That's okay.
Leiden?
You can get away with that.
Okay, but that's in the Netherlands, not in the island. That's in the mainland.
That's right. The island's not big enough for that.
Yeah. So you did live in the Netherlands.
I live in the Netherlands, correct,
yeah,
yes.
Okay. So following his university years, he moved to South Africa, where he initially worked with the Geological Survey. Now, that's international. That's an American...
No, that's the local geological survey.
Okay, but that's geological surveys in
South Africa. Yeah.
But all over the whole country.
That's correct, yes.
Right, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what's the purpose of geological survey?
Well, that can include exploration for minerals, mapping of the country, which I was involved in. So basically, it provides services to the public sector.
Okay, which is very important, so we know where things are.
Exactly, yeah.
So Bert then moved, you followed this for a period with Shell Oil Company in South Africa?
Well, actually Shell Coal.
Sorry. Shell Coal.
I got involved in the coal industry at the time.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
not oil. In identifying fields or?
Identifying coal reserves in South Africa was very important for South Africa.
And was that through a drilling process or through seismic? Or
drilling, mainly
strictly
drilling.
Strictly drilling.
Mainly drilling, yeah.
Interesting. And then you worked for BP Coal International out of London, or in London?
In London, correct, yes.
How many years were you there?
I worked for BP about almost 8 years.
Okay.
And not just in London. London was just a base.
Sure.
And they sent me out to several countries as I listed here.
Went to Colombia, Botswana, Madagascar, Indonesia, Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
So you kind of...
Different postings, yeah.
Did you wear out a lot of suitcases?
Well, actually, you learn to pack easily and lightly.
But basically doing the same job, right?
Same thing, coal exploration in all those different fields and aspects, yeah.
Was there one area that there was more coal reserves than others, or were there areas that you were disappointed or thought there was?
Well, it's exploration, so you don't know what to expect.
Understand.
Yeah.
But of those countries, were there some that there were more than you thought or less than you thought? Or
I was in a very big project in Indonesia where we worked with an Australian company.
Right.
And that actually got eventually involved in a very large coal mine with large exports to Japan and still existing now, yeah.
And then you moved to this area, and you've been doing work in North Carolina and Virginia?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What type of work is that? Still geological?
Geological, yes. I left the coal industry in the late 1980s, and actually joined a granite company in South Africa and did a lot of exploration for granite reserves in that area across Southern Africa. And then subsequently they sent me to the States to the exploration for, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. In North Carolina,
right,
and Virginia. Yeah.
So just again, some information that you'd furnished me, just to aid to your background here. You conducted geological studies for highways and bridge and construction in West Virginia, road and slope stability projects, groundwater studies, stream analysis, and involved in numerous hydrological projects, including water stream assessment of drainage areas associated with design flood calculations, spillway computations of dam modifications, and new dam designs. 2009, you and a colleague started your own consulting company, Northwest Geoscience, which is based in High Point. Is that still
going strong, yes.
Good, indeed, good for you. Mm-hmm. We want to know more about that. Of course, the company's involved in environmental site investigation, development underground areas, subsurface soil quality investigations, often related to UST, or stormwater issues, dam development with engineer firms. 2010, he started teaching geology, we talked about early, at Forsyth Tech, and at Surrey Community as well, which is not so much curriculum-driven, but it can be classified as personal enrichment class. Why is that? You say then it's just listen, participate, no homework and tests. That's my kind of class. What about you, Teresa? No test, no homework?
I like rocks.
She likes rocks.
I would enjoy the class, I'm sure. I really do like rocks. I actually got a rock for Valentine's Day, not a diamond, a big rock out in my yard.
Well, maybe you can sign up for the next semester class, Teresa.
I love rocks.
We'll sign you up for next semester.
Sounds good. So it says something about Surrey Community College. Did you do anything at Surrey Community?
Yes. People knew I was a geologist, and they expressed over the years, you know, to know more about geology. And I told them at the time I was teaching at Forsyth Tech, which, of course, is a curriculum course for students. And so I started talking to Surrey Community College and said, well, people actually showed interest in just general knowledge about geology. Why don't we start a simple geology class, basic geology,
mm-hmm.
It's basically what they call under the personal enrichment section.
Okay.
And so we started last year with a class of about 7 or 8 people there, and we did 2 sections, one in the fall and one in the spring.
What's the purpose of the class?
Well, just general information about geology. People are, as Teresa said, are interested in rocks, want to know more about rocks, what's it all about.
Okay.
And make it easy as well. As I said here, you know, it's an easygoing class. Students participate in questions, come with questions from people living on
farms.
So
they'll actually bring samples in and have you identify them, and then show them how to.
They always bring samples.
Fool's gold, get a fool's gold.
We got fool's gold. We got one sample actually from the Dobson area, which was people sometimes come to me and say, well, is this a meteorite or not? What do you think about it? You know, and question. People come living on farms and ask questions about their water as well,
sure.
Groundwater. So actually, it's good interaction between the
Teresa,
people.
Teresa, we ought to sign up for that class. That sounds like fun. It's an evening class.
I would enjoy it. I really would.
Since you like rock so much.
Yeah, well, my husband crossed Kibler Valley to get me a rock one day. He knows that I love rocks. And everywhere we go, we bring back a rock.
That's right. I mean, that's people. Yeah, people always bring rocks around. Yeah.
Do you collect rocks?
I have collected rocks over the years, but as I was moving around, I've actually left them bits and pieces all over the world somewhere.
Sort of like the one that goes out in the woods and leaves the popcorn so they can find their way back.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yes.
We want to talk about geology and earth science today, yeah. If that's something you'd like to. And then something I ran across, we'll get into maybe later, is real estate and rocks.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of interesting because this is a real estate show devoted to land yeah. education, free land education. www.letstalkland.net is the master site, Spotify and Podbean. But talk to us about geology. Give us a short class here.
You want to talk about the land side of it? Yeah.
Either way, or just geology and it, you know.
Some people actually don't always realize how much geology relates to their property, or actually maybe their geological knowledge may help to understand more about their property. And in general, geology is, I always say, is a very logical science. I always tell my students actually just always think geological, you know.
Okay.
It's all about observation. And even when, as a landowner, you observe your land as well and learn from what you experience.
Right.
The same with geologists. You know, we don't make up things. We use what we see in our assessment of mm-hmm. processes. So, and the main thing is to make people understand geological processes worldwide. That relates, for instance, to... plate tectonics is a very popular topic with geology, of course. And that actually explains a lot of actually how different types of rocks are formed. And we discuss that in detail, the different minerals that make up the rocks and how these minerals are formed and subsequently how the rocks are formed. So people find it interesting, how the plates move. Then we talk about the impact of the different type of rocks, how they weather, how they erode.
What's the most common rock on the planet? Granite?
Well, it depends on how you view it. If you, for instance, sedimentary rocks are very important.
Okay.
Very sedimentary rocks actually, percentage-wise or volume-wise, only make up about 5% of the rocks on this planet. But they cover 75% of the surface.
Interesting.
So they actually give you a lot of information about the history, the physical history of a piece of land or a piece of country. So sedimentary, to understand the sedimentary rocks is actually able to learn and identify and explain the physical history of a country or a piece of land or a continent. Yeah, granites and other metamorphic rocks, igneous rocks and metamorphic rocks make a larger part volume-wise, but not at the surface per se. They're often underground or, you know, form underground.
Because, you know, when they dig wells and stuff, at least in our area, they always want to get into the granite and fracture it and get into a fissure and so on because purification reasons.
Yeah, we can talk about it a bit later on about water because I think that's an interesting topic. We take a bit more time than just answering it right now.
Yeah, we might have to do more than one show.
Yeah. Yeah, we can subdivide into water because I made some notes after I talked to you about what impacts land properties and what
real
are
estate,
important
yeah.
real estate, what to look for and what to think about when you see a piece of land and as you just touched on as well, you know, what to do with groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
Where does groundwater come from? How does it travel? Things like that, which we also discuss in our geology course.
Okay.
And that's where we got a lot of interaction too.
Yeah. Well, this is our guest today. Bert Mayboom, this is Let's Talk Land. A little short, right? So, Bert, we're talking about geology, and thank you for being on the show today. You're quite a guest.
You're welcome.
And Teresa's even learning something. Shadi's down there. You know, usually she's over here in the chair asleep, but she got her fascinated today. Shadi learned all about rocks. We're talking about geology. You teach geology courses at Forsyth Tech, and then you've got one at a little bit different class, but still on geology, at Surrey Community College in Dobson, North Carolina. one of our great schools.
Yeah.
So I'll turn it back over to you. It's your show.
Okay. Yeah. When we left off, we briefly mentioned water issues and important aspects. What I mentioned early on about sedimentary rocks, so important. And of course, sedimentary rocks are formed by water. They lay down sedimentarily. Mm-hmm. In Latin, it means actually.
And they layer.
Lay down. So lay down in horizontal layers. And what causes these sedimentary rocks to lay down? Of course, that's basically the transportation by water. Lay down layers. So and we learned that, say, mainly rivers, large or small, are mm-hmm. able to transport a lot of sediments, a lot of grains and sand or clays, as we come to about later on. And they deposit in thick layers.
The heavier anywhere. Sinks and the lighter floats off, right?
Exactly, yeah. Correct. And it got to do with the coarse material, the fine material, and to do with energy of the water. But that's beyond the realm of this mm-hmm. Course on the radio here. Mm-hmm. But the impact of water on land and how they form and actually how they erode the land is, of course, very important to landowners as well. And so the impact of surface water on mm-hmm. their land, which brings me to think about, you know, surface water, i.e. rivers, floods, things like that. So if you have a piece of land in mind, you have to be cognizant, of course, what is actually the flood level, possible flood level in maybe the river.
Even a stream too, right?
Or a small stream, yeah. Exactly, yeah. Statewide, or actually countrywide, you know, they have produced flood maps. Which I presume you are aware
year,
of.
500 year.
Exactly, 100 year, 500 year outline of floodplains, exactly. Unfortunately, of course, that is not always possible at smaller creeks.
Right.
They have to go more by history or actually maybe sort of evidence of flooding. And that's at times as possible. If you, say, walk around a creek and you see maybe a slope failure along the creek, you might be able to identify, you know, old... say sediment deposits actually is mm-hmm. indicated to what height the water level actually can rise on that property. So it's an indication also, and if you look at the topography, do you see a sort of flat floodplain mm-hmm. with different sort of what I call terraces
right.
where the river may have flowed before? So an indication to you as well, you know, where do I want to build my residence.
Right. Or a structure. It doesn't have to be your residence. You may have a $50,000 structure. And
exactly.
Non-insurable or high insurance. One of the things I've observed, obviously, and I think that's what we're talking about, Teresa, you as well, is, you know, like the rivers and stuff, you'll see the sand sediment up on the mm-hmm. banks, and it'll stop at some point.
Yeah.
Even up on the banks. So it's outside the main course of the river,
yeah.
Right.
Which is actually an interesting aspect, but I mean, slightly sidetrack here. Because if you look at, for instance, we have the problems along the Mississippi River, mm-hmm. Where you've got the natural levees. You know, and you find out that these levees are formed by flooding rivers, and where the energy is high. So the first, actually, sediments that get deposited when the water retreats and the energy reduces
right.
is the sand. And then further away from the river, where the energy is less, the finer deposits actually get deposited there, like
the
clays and the silt.
Yep.
So that's why, what you said as well, you find these sand levees along the river, and mm-hmm. further away you find these swampy areas with clays and silt. Yeah.
So it's common sense, but it's not the amount of water, it's the speed of the water.
It's the
energy. Like when you're doing a timber project, you know, they put in what they call control bars, which is in the logging road, they'll cut a 45-degree angle and ditch it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and depending on the slope, you may have one every 10 feet, and you may have one every 50 feet, but it's to slow the water down,
mm-hmm.
which decreases the amount of erosion. So it's the speed of the water, not necessarily the amount of water that travels over, especially disturbed dirt or soils.
Exactly. It's an erosional force, the energy of the water, which actually can cause all the damage, yeah. Right. Not so much always the volume, yeah. Correct, yeah. But, another aspect, of course, then the surface water we need to be aware of on property and the history about surface water and flooding is, of course, everybody's mind is groundwater. Groundwater is a very important aspect, especially, of course, when you buy property outside the cities, where you don't have any water supply. So you need to find your own water supply. And that's an important aspect because we're looking at, of course, when we drill for water, we need to find out more about actually what's underneath there.
Go back a little bit further. In the old days, you will see these old hand-dug wells.
Yeah, correct, yes.
And it was usually the smallest one in the family that was the one that was lowered down in the hole with the bucket and the shovel.
Yeah.
Right. And then they would line it with rocks. And you could actually hit water 20, 30, 40 feet.
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
But they didn't understand surface water. And, of course, then when agriculture, when oil came around, you started having herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, now that stuff, among other things, the key to a well, I've always been told, is to keep the surface water out of the well. And that's why they seal them, and it's important.
Correct, yes, because sometimes, and we find it in when as a consultant, we find as well, at times when you've got surface water, or well, groundwater near the surface is contaminated. So you actually want to go to the deeper, what we call aquifer,
mm-hmm.
where actually where you've got fresher groundwater at a large, greater depths.
One of the veins, right, underground.
Yeah, and that's always funny because when you talk about aquifers, and which basically is the medium through which water flows, sometimes when you sometimes speak to the old farmers, they sometimes think you've got underground rivers flowing, you know?
Right.
But of course, that's not the case. The thing is with groundwater, a very important aspect is to differentiate what we call the porosity
mm-hmm.
and the permeability.
Okay.
And that can be in the soil or in the rock.
Talk about those two terms just for the
yeah.
show, for those that don't understand those.
No problem. Yeah, I was going to. Porosity, as the word says, Lou, is, you know, is it's got to do with pores.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And porosity actually is expressed as, in percentages, the amount of volume of pores within a sediment or a rock. So if we have a lot of pores in sediment, like in sand, the porosity is very high
okay.
because we have a lot of pores volume-wise. Okay. So you can imagine if we have a well-sorted sand, say if you say compare a jar with marbles,
mm-hmm.
okay, and of same size, and you put them in a jar, the marbles, there are a lot of pores there between the marbles.
Right.
You can fill a lot of water in the jar. But if you have the same jar with the same marbles, a lot of sand in there too, so smaller marbles, so to speak,
right.
okay, all those smaller marbles fill the pores between the marbles. So obviously there's less pore space
right.
between those marbles. And that's what we call actually a poorly sorted, because you have marbles of different sizes
gotcha.
With grain. So a poorly sorted sediment is less porous, because there's not many pores present there to contain water. So therefore, the important aspect as well is when you talk about drilling for groundwater, are we dealing with well-sorted sediments
mm-hmm.
or poorly sorted sediments? Okay, so that's a very important aspect.
What level do you find that? How many feet normally? And I'm sure that would vary.
This
is more the top area?
Well, it all depends how deep the weathering is.
Okay.
Yeah, how deep is
the weathering? So if you're at the coast, it's one. If you're in the Midlands, it's other. If you're in the mountain areas, it's different. If you're in the desert areas, it's different. If you're
coastal areas, of course, in sure. the coastal areas of North Carolina, where you've got sand deposit to great depths.
About half the state.
Thousands of feet deep, yeah. you know, you actually look at a lot of... So anyway, a poor sediment or a rock actually with a lot of cracks in there is able to let water through quite easily. It's called an aquifer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, you have the pores, and then depends on, so you talk about porosity,
mm-hmm.
and the other term was permeability.
Right.
And at times people confuse the two.
That's why I wanted you to clarify this. Because
permeability is actually defines how permeable a rock is or a sediment is. So actually, how easy does it allow to flow the water from pore to pore to pore? So that how permeable can it travel from each pore to each pore, basically.
Okay.
And if we have sediment like clay actually absorbs water, as
right.
you know, we come to maybe later on. It's a swell context mm-hmm. here. Clay actually absorbs water, can contain water, but as it swells, it acts as a barrier. So when you have clay barriers, basically it stops water flow. So clay obviously is porous in a way because it contains water,
right.
but it's not permeable because it doesn't allow the water to flow through it.
And that's what we see when we're doing septic permits, you know, when we're actually evaluating the soil. We see expansion clay to sepalite, you know, which is decayed rock, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And rotten rock,
basically. Rotten rock, yeah.
Rotten rock, yeah.
Is that a particular type of rock?
No. It's just a chemical weathering of the rock. And there's any sepalite, actually, or any rotten rock we can call sepalite, right. Yeah.
And we're finding that's actually better for septic system than the clays and the normal soils at some point.
Because it has a better permeability.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So we go back to that permeability.
Exactly. It's very important. So it's very important to know your subsurface when you drill for water. And as I said as well, you know, you can have a near-surface aquifer where the water flows through quite easily. But the danger is, as you mentioned early on as well, it can be contaminated. So oftentimes you try to drill much deeper and then go through maybe different what we call aquitards, which are the non-permeable or less permeable layers of clay, which separate maybe the aquifer closer to the surface from an aquifer deeper down. So what you do, you actually drill to much deeper aquifers and make sure that the hole is well reamed or well closed off. So it's no
collapse.
So there's no contact between the upper aquifer and the lower aquifer, so you don't get contamination from the upper aquifer to the lower aquifer. So you have to be very cognizant of that.
So when we talk to the well drillers, or you know, they talk about fracturing, fracturing the granite. Mm-hmm. Is that even further down, or is that, are we talking about the same thing here?
Well, of course, once you get out of the sediments, you get into the rock,
right.
And of course, the top of the rock is still, of course, it's a process of solid rock to slightly wetted rock, moderately wetted rock into soil later on. So actually, the top section of the rock is wetted. And every rock has joints.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every rock is jointed or has fractures in there. So close to the top of the rock, you encounter far more cracks and joints than further down.
Okay.
Of course, and these joints and cracks are filled with groundwater. So if you have a nice fractured rock there, you can actually have a good aquifer, good quality of water there.
Could be 500 gallons, could be 500,000 gallon area, right?
Exactly, yeah. And it can be at different depths as well, yeah. It could be 200 feet, could be 300 feet deep, yeah.
And that's where you're going to find your purest water mostly, right?
Exactly, yeah. That's right, yeah.
Interesting.
But anyway, and as I mentioned as well, you know, an interesting aspect as well is talk about groundwater. About the areas which are good groundwater and less groundwater. I talk about the Triassic basins nearby here, you know, where you actually have problems with the groundwater there. And the problem actually there is...
And that's in the middle of the state, pretty much.
Well,
right?
It's, yeah. Well, you have...
North to south.
Triassic basins running northeast, southwest. And, of course, you've got one near the southern part of Stokes County and then further east in right. North Carolina.
So Pinehurst area.
Correct, yes. And because of the poor mixture of sedimentary rocks in those Triassic basins, and we have a mixture of grain sizes. So it's poorly sorted, and what I said earlier on as well, it's a low porosity. So because it's poorly sorted, remember that jar with the marbles?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So your yield of water, groundwater yield, is much lower in those areas there. But we are fortunate that in some of those basins we have what are called diabase dikes. And those dikes... Those dikes actually work as a barrier, as an hard rock, as a sort of vertical dike, semi-vertical dike. And basically, as the groundwater flows downwards in the surface, these dikes actually stop the water from flowing because actually they're not
where does
thermal.
It go? Just sits, I mean.
Well, it actually sits against the dike.
Right.
So the best place to drill there for groundwater is to identify the locations of the dikes and drill them on the upstream side of the dike. Basically, and you can do that by looking where the dikes are present, and you can do water divining. I've done water divining in South Africa.
I didn't know if there was anything to that or not. I always wondered.
Me too, actually.
Copper wires?
Copper wires. I worked with copper wires. And
with a wooden handle?
No, actually, just in my hands.
Okay.
Yeah. And we'll talk about it a bit later on,
yeah.
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah, I've got a story for you here. But just real quick, this guy was showing some land and was looking for a corner, and he invited us up to the porch to get some waters in the summer. And he said, we were talking about dowsing. Or looking, and he had this like radio antenna with a wooden thing, and he put the cup on the rail, and he'd say, find water," and that thing would bend over. He put it all the way around that deck, and it would bend directly wherever that cup of water was. It would bend itself towards that cup
really?
Of water. Have you ever seen that before?
No, I have not, but I got another story about that.
Our guest today is Bert Rayboom. This is Let's Talk Land. So, Bert, let's continue on that the water.
Oh, yeah, that groundwater thing mm-hmm. there. You left a bit of a story there. And actually...
Have you got one, too?
Yeah, I want a better you story, actually. Yeah.
You got a better story than mine?
A better story than you
what
have.
About you, Teresa? Shadow, you got one?
I only have one story, and a guy actually did use a willow stick and did find water in our yard. That's how they found our well. And I just wondered if it was just a fluke or if it was actually something to it. So I thought it was cool.
I think it's always cool, too. And geologically, I said, I cannot explain it.
You cannot explain it?
I cannot explain it.
I
don't know. The thing is, go back to my South African days and when we were drilling for coal at the time. And our office was on the old farmhouse looking for water. And the guy came along and had a piece of willow trees in South Africa too, mm-hmm. as you can understand. Okay,
sure.
Good. Anyway, and he said, okay, he walked around and his little stick twig went down and pointed out to the water. He said, okay, Bert, you tried. So he gave me the same stick and I walked across the same place.
You didn't do anything?
Didn't do a thing in my fingers or my wrist. So hang on, sir. You hold the wheeler rod, and you grab my left wrist and walk next to me. And lo and behold, the twig went down.
Now explain that one.
Him holding my hand.
Explain that one.
No idea.
Some kind of polarity, right?
I don't know.
It's got to be.
For something.
But nee.
Yeah, it's Twilight Zone. But and then
wow.
I found out later on, actually, I can divine water by using copper rods, by just bending it in my hand. And basically, and then when walking straight across the water, and basically they come together, they cross over, and then once you pass the spot. I mean, it's fascinating.
Well, water is the most incredible. We won't get into this, but I've done a lot of studying on it. It's like crazy stuff. It's mm-hmm. like what makes it all work is water.
We can't live without it.
Well, it's not only that. It's you know, there's people who do stream restorations, and there's certain things that they do to tame the water.
Mm-hmm.
I won't get into it. I'll let you go to YouTube like I do and
not
do
today.
Some research. Yeah, but so.
But anyway, that is about water. And of course, water is an important aspect as well because, as I mentioned early on, water. As that permeability and porosity, come back to that again.
Mm-hmm.
And we also mentioned early on about certain clays.
Right. Yeah?
And we call the smectites or the expensive clays or the shrink and swell clays.
And that's something you see in art class too, right, when you're doing clay molding?
Correct, yes.
In the water, you put more water on it to mold it.
It swells nicely, yeah. Of course, as you can imagine, if you have a good montmorillonite or bentonite, which is not that much in North Carolina, underneath your house, and you've got a good rainfall, that clay nicely absorbing that porous and the porous clay absorbing that nice water. And, of course, this pushes up your house. And in a dry condition, that water evaporates again and down your house goes. So
what?
So it's very important to know where you build your structure.
I mean, how much would it move? A centimeter? I mean,
It can move. Some kinds can move inches.
Because I know with concrete, we did some townhouses here mm-hmm. Last year, and we had that 4-degree weather. And it actually lifted the concrete up and it was slab homes, but
yeah.
Actually the first layer of vinyl,
mm-hmm.
because the water underneath it was wet when they poured the concrete, and it froze and then expanded and it just lifted, and then as it got warmer it just settled right back down.
Well,
didn't crack.
That's a good example of what's called freeze and thaw weathering process
uh-huh.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're talking about now, of course, the
soils.
The soils, actually, the clays absorb the water, and so you have to be careful. When you excavate for a structure, and that's actually what did you actually have to remove the clays that are prone to
how many people?
To swell.
How many builders do that?
Several people take shortcuts.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a problem.
Yeah, I know.
And at times we get phone calls as well, and oftentimes, of course, it goes to the engineer because as a geologist, you're not allowed to do engineering work.
Right.
Although we have the same knowledge, but by the board, licensing board, of course, it's not going to there. So often this is passed on to engineers,
sure.
and they just do test soil tests as well, the swelling index of soils.
And that even becomes more important the larger the building and the more weight. And
exactly.
Now you get into core samplings and stuff that you wouldn't do in a house foundation if you're doing on a 20-story building. Or
exactly. You remember the famous story of the tower, Leaning Tower of Pisa in Italy.
I've been there.
You've been there, exactly. And the story goes, actually, when the architects drew up of the design for the tower at Pisa, somebody said, "Do you reckon we need some engineers to work out to actually do some subsurface investigation?" I said, "No, the other guys said, no, it costs too much money. Let's build it as it is." Of course, they make more money now as a tourist attraction.
What if the family gets residuals?
But anyway, so that's about foundation. You have to be very careful to what the subsurface looks like.
How would you test that? I mean, you go buy a piece of land from me or Teresa, right, and you're going to build your home on it. Should we advise you? I mean, as a realtor, should we get that involved? Like, you really want to check out the soils here before you build your home?
I would advise. Yeah, advise.
I don't know if the commission would agree with us getting involved at that level, but I don't know why you couldn't disclose that there's something
How much would it cost to get a little bobcat to dig a little trench? I mean, it costs maybe, how much does it cost? I mean, it's worth it.
When we do perk tests, you know, it's $150.
Exactly.
You know, they'll come out and dig 8 or 9 holes or whatever you need and cover them up, and thank you very much for $150.
At the same time, whilst he's out there to do the perk test, you can actually dig across.
Now, that's interesting.
The footprint of the building.
That's real interesting, Teresa. Hmm.
And that's
but who would come and evaluate that soil?
Yeah, me? That's what I was wondering.
Okay, so now they need the expert
you
to come
contact
in.
Me.
Okay, that's fine.
You contact me.
We'll get all that contact information.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we come
out. So that's a service that your company provides.
Exactly, and we can do it actually takes soil samples from that. Actually, I can work out the soil test on that, yeah.
I like this. This is take notes.
That's very important, yeah.
So, okay.
But anyway, and so that's about the structure. Of course, once you've got the structure as well, and we talk about the soil and the rock further down. Another aspect, of course, where we have a danger is, well, in some aspect, is radon gas.
Right.
Which we found.
We have to deal with that, don't we, Teresa?
Oh, absolutely.
And
I mean, is there much to that?
It depends. It depends on where you are. It depends on the type of rock underneath there. Where you are in the state.
But it also depends on when you do the test and how ventilated it is.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
You know, you can fudge that. That's why I'm questioning the reliability. Mm-hmm. Are there better tests than what we get as kits or these home inspectors bring to do the... You know, I mean, I've always been told before they do it, they come in, open up the doors, the windows.
Exactly, yeah.
You know.
Of course, nothing shows then.
Where nothing shows.
Exactly, yeah. No,
and that's not an accurate test. You need to do it in its actual environment.
Yeah, you're fooling yourself if you do that.
Exactly.
It's like you go to a doctor and say, nothing wrong with me, doctor, but basically you feel miserable.
Right.
Yeah, so you're fooling yourself. And
are those tests pretty accurate, though, even the inexpensive ones, in your opinion?
I have not done them myself, so I cannot comment on that.
That's fine.
No comment on that. But, I mean, it's easy to find out, as I said. I mean, statewide, you can find out maps online.
Yes. It's almost like the floodplain maps.
Exactly.
Or contour maps.
Exactly. And you find out, you know, how many picocurie per liter. Well, that's the unit they use.
Sure. Can't exceed 4.
Exactly, yeah. And that's right. And they say, anything 4 or higher than four picocurie.
Then you have to mitigate. You have to
mitigate.
Putting in ventilation and...
Exactly, more of it, especially in the basement. If it's more actually in the house with the basement.
Right.
House without a basement, you don't have that problem.
No.
Because nothing accumulates underneath the house. But especially a house with the basement.
Right, because you've got the cross-ventilation.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I know the green builders, that's part of the green building checklist, is that they go ahead and mitigate in new construction.
Yeah.
They still may do the radon test, but they'll go ahead and mitigate whether it's there or not. Because, you know, in the future, this stuff can...
Exactly.
It's not here today, but it can
affect you very slowly, and you don't not even aware of it. That's a problem with it, yeah. And it's so cheap to do it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not like, hang on, I'm spending hundreds of dollars on it.
Well, you might if you mitigate it, but, you know.
Yes.
$1,200, $1,500, depending.
Yeah, but if you go to a doctor because you've got something as a result of it, it costs
you
more.
He likes that doctor, Teresa.
The doctor again, yeah.
Just if I can, there were some things when I was doing my research, and I hadn't seen this, which is very interesting. It's called Potential Geological Issues for a Realtor, if I may, Bert, imposed. As a real estate professional, being informed about the area is important. Real estate professionals need to be familiar with the area, schools, neighborhood locations, shopping centers, recreational amenities, and a host of other topics. Being prepared, or at least knowing where to find more information to questions of prospective buyers, is important. Understanding how geology affects a home or building is not a common topic, but is very important. And there's kind of a list here of things, if I may impose on you, shortly. And we won't get into the whole detail, but at least cover the topics that they're saying. Is old mines working in prospects? You know, North Carolina, especially around Charlotte, where I grew up, you know, some of the first gold on the East Coast was found under the streets of downtown Charlotte.
That's correct, yes.
And then you've got several old mines and stuff. And then, of course, you've got mineral mines in North Carolina and different parts and other parts of the country. This show's international. So, you know, we're kind of talking about North Carolina. We use it as an example. But, you know, are these old maps, old mines and stuff, are they mapped anyway in your knowledge? Is this something you see in the geological study?
Not really, but I mean, you can go to the USGS or the NC State or NC Geological Survey,
right,
and you find with a bit of digging, you find old mines, old mine maps in there, or you can go to like the Reed Gold Mine near Gold Hill,
right,
and you find old maps there. But of course, not every, say, Tom, Dick, and Harry or family, maybe
it's gonna
enterprise
have
actually have a very detailed map,
right.
Yeah. We have a family member who lives in the north side of Charlotte, and they have a 3-acre piece of land. And he regularly basically thinks disappearing in old tunnels there still on this piece
old
of land.
Sinkholes show
old
up.
Old sinkholes, old tunnels collapsing there, yeah. Correct. So you have to be very aware, actually, where you buy and what you buy, yeah.
Sinkholes, that's relating to this too. What's a sinkhole?
Well, a sinkhole, of course, and
carbon rock, and you find it in carbon rock and limestone.
Correct,
Kansas?
Yes. Yeah, so several areas in the southeast part of the states come to mind is like Florida, Mississippi, Tennessee, Kentucky. They're underlain by large, what we call sedimentary rocks, called carbonates or limestone rocks. And groundwater is slightly acidic, whether you like it or not, but I mean, you drink slightly acidic. You don't taste, of course, it's very small acid level in your groundwater. So that acidic groundwater eats away your limestone. It dissolves the limestone over time.
What does it dissolve it into? Another chemical? Or?
Yes, it's a carbonate, basically.
It turns into a carbon?
Carbonate, yeah.
Okay.
Carbon, yeah. Kind of carbonate, yeah. Calcium.
Calcium carbonate. Yeah.
Well, limestone is calcium carbonate. Right. Actually, it changes into, it dissolves into H2CO3, I think. It dissolves with water.
I'm going to document that on the board.
Okay, good.
Where's my chalk?
But so as it eats away the limestone below ground, it actually reduces the say maybe the carrying capacity of overlying structures,
right,
as it eats away there. So over time, as that evolves away, disappears, your structure is prone to collapse into that large hole underneath that was created underneath, and that's why, you know, in Florida,
you'll see this thing called the house, the car, in a big hole.
Exactly, unfortunately.
Or some of that's water pipe mains bursting.
The problem as well is, as long as there's water in those cavities, those caves, it's not it's an issue, of course, but once, especially where people are withdrawing groundwater from the subsurface, the water is taken out of these limestones. Of course, that water actually helped holding up the roofs of those cavities, but once the water actually subsides and disappears, there's nothing to hold that roof up.
You see
up
that out west a lot.
And basically it collapses.
With the underground lakes and stuff.
Yeah. So that's
in Florida, like you said.
We had it happen. I mean, I heard something on the news about it happening in Walkertown. There's a restaurant down there that they're having problems with a sinkhole, like Bojangles or one of those restaurants right around there, and they're having problems with a sinkhole. If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
Well, you know, I was down there the other day near that, and the parking lot in one part was sinking, and I bet you that's part of that.
Yeah, it was on the news.
Yeah.
So I wonder, is it possible that could be man-made water problems that would cause something like that, or is it
well, in
the
natural,
pervious surface is not drained properly?
Well, in town, I first comes to mind is stormwater issue, maybe.
Right.
Maybe a stormwater
that's
pipe.
That's where you would start looking.
A stormwater pipe that maybe have cracked or burst open, actually, of course. And then the storm water doesn't actually travel through the pipe anymore. But actually, it piped. It's called piping alongside the pipe, and then basically washes out.
Erodes that.
Subsurface. I mean, it's the first thing. I have not seen the site, so I cannot comment on that.
Right.
But I mean, it's the first thing which comes to mind. Yeah.
Slope movements and landslides.
Important aspect too. That's especially in the western part of the states. And
or mountainous areas.
Mountainous areas, exactly, yeah. And my colleague and I actually worked on it a little bit quite a while back. And that was in the days that the U.S. Geological Survey worked together with the state. And they said, well, it's a good idea actually to have hazard maps created there. So people know actually which are the most hazardous area prone to possible landslides or instability due to rain or freeze and thaw issues like that as well. So several maps were actually already produced around the Boone area at that time, but then actually and identified as, well, these are areas which you should not be building on, or you have to build large retaining walls to contain the soil. And sorry to say that a lot actually land realtors came up in arms. Hang on, we don't want those maps anymore.
Really?
Because actually that actually takes out a lot of properties which we want to sell and we cannot sell. And it really, they actually had people actually went to Raleigh to talk about it. Actually, and they basically stopped.
Sure, the commission got involved in that.
Maps,
yeah,
exactly.
The commission got involved, and I remember that.
And the thing is, you know, what is more important? I mean,
disclosure is important on everything
exactly,
we do.
Exactly. So, I mean, is it the mighty dollar here, or is it...
In that case, yeah.
Unfortunately. But, I mean, actually, could people... A warning, or people could build there, but take out actually an insurance, special insurance for that, of course, landslide insurance, which is possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually is unfair to the possible future landowner.
Exactly.
To not disclose that, or at least...
With respect to time, these are some things that we've already talked about. Floodplain issues, this is that list for realtors that they should be...
Yeah.
Aware of rippable and non-rippable earth material, we talked about that. Expansive soils, which swinks or clays. Groundwater, we covered that really good. Acid-producing rocks, right? And then radon, we got into that.
Yeah, we didn't talk about acid-producing yet, but...
Okay, well, let's do that.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about it briefly.
Just briefly, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically... a lot of rocks actually contain sulfide minerals. And those sulfide minerals...
Pyrite,
yeah, basically the famous pyrite, yeah.
Sulfide minerals, yeah.
Yeah, and basically these pyrites can dissolve also in groundwater, and actually the groundwater becomes contaminated with sort of an acidity from the sulfur. So, but most times, actually, that's not a main real issue.
Where would we see that? What type of terrain?
It's more of the...
Mountainous?
Mountainous areas,
okay.
Yeah, yes.
And then we cut radon as we move along here. And then we got into arsenic and groundwater.
Arsenic and groundwater is, of course, an issue these days as well. And
volcanic rock.
Yeah, that's mostly in the what's called the Carolina terrain or the Carolina slate belt, which actually are old volcanic deposits, which basically goes back to, if you follow my class, plate tectonics, how they actually arrived in North Carolina. And it's very interesting, actually,
some of the oldest in the world, right? The Blue Ridge?
Which is very old, yeah. It's very old, yeah. Indeed, you're talking about.
But not Pilot Mountain, Sourtown, and Hanging Rock. That's anomaly, right? They were actually older than the Blue Ridge, I've been told.
Well, they're about a half billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
The Pilot Mountain,
as opposed to the Blue Ridge.
Some of the Blue Ridge are older than that.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, they're old. Old marine deposits.
I was misinformed.
Old marine deposits. Yeah.
Right. Ice age. I mean,
Ice age is very young. That was yesterday, geologically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Earthquakes?
Yeah, earthquakes, an important aspect, of course. Not so much sometimes we feel earthquakes. And you remember the earthquake we had in 2011?
Mm-hmm, I do.
And everybody was very excited about it. The earthquake was actually happened near Mineral in Virginia. And everybody felt an earthquake except me as a geologist.
Of course.
I was walking around. I was doing some investigation in a wooded area. And...
It was cushioned.
Yeah, cushioned exactly. So, I came home later and said, "Have you heard about the earthquake? What earthquake?" Anyway, yeah, earthquakes. I mean, it's fortunately, they don't live in the West.
Right.
So where actually we can take out earthquake insurance.
But that doesn't mean it won't happen.
It doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. It won't happen. Correct, yes. And we have earthquake zones here, but not as frequent as further out west.
And for our friends at the coast, you got coastal hazards, which are storms. You know, that creates flooding and hurricanes. And we've had a lot of that over the recent years.
Correct, yes.
Hysterical, I call it. Sea level rise.
Yeah.
You know, and we're seeing that, you know.
The problem, of course, the Barrier Islands. Mm-hmm. And never-ending story there.
Yeah.
And they move left to right, up and down.
They're constantly recreating themselves.
Exactly, yeah. Whether it's westwards, eastwards, or northwards, southwards, exactly. And that's the problem with buying property there.
Yeah, beach erosion.
Exactly, be aware of
constantly,
that.
Constantly. Mm-hmm. And then we come back to granite, but I think that was a previous page that I had.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, talk about the famous granite quarry in my area, maybe. Yeah.
So with about 3 or 4 minutes of this section before we close out, give me three things that you'd like to leave the listening audience with, of stuff that we've already covered or new stuff that we didn't cover you would like to add to your show. Putting you on the spot here, Bert.
Yeah, you put me on the spot indeed. Yeah. Well, as I said earlier on, the investigation of subsurface investigation is very important. Now, know where you want to build, know exactly where you want to build, and let a specialist or a scientist look at it. I mean, you may think, well, it cost me a couple of $100 or maybe $1,000, but I mean, in the long run, this is money well spent.
Sure.
Do subsurface investigations. Do involve people in well drilling. Of course, there are good well drillers out there, and I'm not attacking them at all. They have a lot of experience with, especially in the area about veins, etc. Mm-hmm. Floodplains, etc.
Okay.
And site assessments. I mean, even if you buy a piece of property which seems to be virgin, mm-hmm. you know, have a scientist come out there and do an environmental site assessment, because you don't know what actually was used for in the past. Even if it was used for things in the past which are not recorded,
right.
But may actually have a large impact on your property.
Could be some arsenic that was used exactly. years ago, which was very common. Or
you could have some buried drums there somewhere.
Right. Or just what I call the collectible piles, you know, on the old farms like our family.
Exactly.
There was a garbage collection. You found an eroding part of the land that you weren't farming, and that's where all the collectibles went.
And you buy the property and you buy the responsibility.
What you see is what you get.
Exactly.
Unless you do the research. Mm. We call that a due diligence period.
Exactly, but not everybody does it because people cut corners.
Well, because we're not trained as realtors, because there's no land education, the purpose of the show is to help people understand.
Exactly.
Or buyers or sellers or property owners, you know, it's all one subject that we're talking about here.
Indeed.
Anything else? I want to, before we close out too, I want you to kind of promote your class at Forsyth Tech that's coming up. And also dates and stuff, and a little bit about that class very briefly.
Well, at Forsyth Tech, I don't promote it that much because of automatic enrollment there.
I understand but people could still enroll.
People still enroll, yeah,
sure.
Exactly, yeah. And actually, it's a very good class because it requires another science class, which they have to do. You know, they can choose between biology and chemistry.
And the prerequisites.
Exactly, yeah. And I always, of course, promote geology because geology is just fun subject.
Exactly.
Because actually it's all around us.
Right.
And biology and chemistry is sometimes hidden away. Secret formulas. And
Ronnie's got some of that in the back room.
But anyway, and then my class at Surrey Community College, which I start in September, that's an evening class this time. And so that's a personal enrichment class.
What's the hours?
6 to 9 on Thursday evenings.
And how long does it run?
For 8 weeks.
8 weeks,
Yeah. And then basically that's followed by next class in the springtime.
Okay.
So section one and section two. And then as a geologist, I'm still involved with rocks as well. And you know, years ago in 2006, my wife and I actually turned my, not say hobby, but actually into monumental stones as well. So my wife,
I go by it sometimes 2 and 3 times a day.
That's good. But anyway, buy a rock from us and non-memorials. But I mean, as a geologist, I mean, got a lot of information and a lot of knowledge about actually, because I work in quarries as well where the rock came from, and I can advise people actually on the rock types and again permeability. You know, how permeable are rocks? You mentioned granite here, And of course, and as a consultant geologist with Northwest Geoscience and High Point, we do all these site assessments, soil investigations. Mm-hmm. I mean, just contact me, you know. That's
okay. Yeah, I'll maybe get one here pretty soon. Went over the 70 mark, and I've already got my spot up there with my family at our family church. And it's got a beautiful view.
Okay.
So we'll have to get something.
For where you're located, okay.
I want to go back a little bit. When did the subject of geology, you know, you go back to Aristotle's and this and this, but when was the first geologist? How far can we go back and maybe a little history on that?
Geology doesn't go back that far, actually, because people were not interested in geology. They had different priorities. And because in the olden days, people worked their lands. Not like you do today, too. But maybe not selling land, but working the land,
sure.
Of course. Anyway, so people got more interested over time, and especially after the Renaissance, you know, people got more education. And people start thinking about, okay, how old is the Earth? That's actually where it started.
Okay.
How old is the Earth?
The question.
The big question. And what processes are taking place on this planet?
Right.
So there was a Scottish physicist, actually, was. But actually, James Hutton is a very famous name, and I always ask my students, you know, remember James Hutton? If I phone you 2 o'clock in the morning and, you know, ask about James Hutton, you should answer the question. James Hutton actually, he self-taught and saw the processes that took place over time. So it was in the 1700s, basically,
okay.
At that time there. So we don't go back that far.
Right.
But anyway, he identified that processes, they take place very, very slowly. He saw it in the rock formations that mm-hmm. they found out in Scotland. You know? So he said as well, you know, you look at, for instance, if you walk around in the mountains here, Theresa mentioned Kibler Valley, you know, mm-hmm. walk around the Dan River, see those pebbles in there.
Right.
And the pebbles taken away by energy, water energy. How they lay down successively in layers, you know, and this is a very slow process. So he recognized that these processes were very slow. But he said, well, I got these hundreds of feet of rock, you know. So, I mean, if this is a very slow process, how long has it taken those rocks to form?
Gotcha.
So he came with ideas, hang on, the Earth must have been much older than we always thought, you know. And also start recognizing, like, if you walk around on the beach, you see ripple marks on the beach mm-hmm. or in the rivers, in the sand, little ripples, you know, here and there, formed by the water. If you see rock outcrops, so basically rock at the surface, with these, well, petrified in a way.
Right.
Petrified samples in there, you know, or petrified ripples in there. So obviously, those ripples in the rock must be formed under the same conditions as I see today.
I see.
So he came with the idea, you know, if we understand the present, we can understand the past. So his key phrase in a way was, you know, the present is the key to the past. That's what it is, you know.
Excellent.
So that basically, if we understand today's processes, we can explain the process that took place hundreds, thousands, millions of years ago. But because the processes have not changed. Physical laws are still the same.
Right.
So that was an interesting aspect that over time. And again, it's a matter of observation.
Been a great guest. Been a great show. How about taking a minute here and give your commercial, your name, your company, how they get in touch with you, website. Email. How do they get in touch with you, Bert?
Well, you can contact me on my email address is rockdoc.
Rockdoc.
Yeah, surprising. rockdoc@hotmail.com.
We got a rock jock over here.
Okay, there's a rock doc
jock,
here.
Rock doc.
Anyway, yeah, so you can contact me on my email or contact me at Northwest Geoscience. There's a website.
Northwest?
Northwest Geoscience.
Geoscience.
High Point. Yeah.
Okay.
Or actually, and for the class at Surrey Community College, you can sign up for the class there.
Same at Forsyth?
Same at Forsyth, yeah. Okay. And for continuing education and or otherwise at Surrey Community College at the Pilot Center.
You want to give your phone number out?
My phone number is 336-325-0548.
If you need a permanent geologist on your last resting place, Memorial.
Nunn Memorial is a good place to go.
Right in Pilot Mountain downtown Key Street.
South Key Street, yeah. Indeed. Yeah, be there for 13 years.
So see Mary, and mm-hmm. she's there. I call you Bert and Ernie. We don't know where we got that name from.
I don't know, no idea why.
But I love it. Bert, where's Ernie? But thank you. You've been a tremendous guest. Teresa?
Wake up.
Anyway, thank you for joining us today. Let us know how you like the show. If you have any questions or topics you'd like to suggest, we'd appreciate them all. All questions are welcomed, and all of our guests may be emailed with your questions or concerns as well. The show is for the public and, most importantly, for real estate agents who do not have a source of land education. This is free land education for all. After the show's broadcast, it's downloaded on the master website, which is www.letstalkland.net, no apostrophe, letstalkland.net. Also downloaded on Podbean and Spotify. The email to contact me is Lou, L-O-U, at mylandpro.com. My cell number is 336-669-1405. Teresa, how do they get in touch with you?
You can email me at teresa.mylandpro@gmail.com or call me at 336-325-2039.
And Teresa's the landlady. I'm the landman, and you're the landlady. Rodney, how do they get in touch with us here?
Well, they can go to our website, go to WKTE1090.com, and also they can click on there and listen to your show every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 o'clock. And also they can download the Simple Radio app and listen to us anywhere in the world.
And we're Beach Music and Oldies?
Beach and Oldies.
5 years?
5 years in a row, being the number one Beach and Oldies radio station on the East Coast.
And you just got a nice award.
Yes, I did. Thank you for DJ of the Year Award.
Well
from
deserved.
The Reader's Choice.
Well deserved. Well now let's stay tuned for Dr. Darby.